Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Clean Cut Meals. Clean Cut Meals offer a professional meal prep service and have various plans to suit your specific goals. They change up their menus every week so that you never get bored, and this can help you stay on track long term. Clean Cut are helping me with all my post-workout meals as I prepare to try and run 230 kilometers self-sufficient through the Arctic Circle next February. I've been using their meals for nearly a year now, so if you're short on time or just looking to get the time back from shopping, cooking, preparing or clearing up after meals, then definitely go check the lads out. To get 20% off your first time order, go to cleancutmeals.ie and enter the podcast code BKF at the checkout. That's BKF as in Brian Keane Fitness, BKF at the checkout for 20% off all first time orders. If you have any other questions, you can just fire the lads over an email too. Now, onto this week's episode. Enjoy.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is part two from last week's episode. So if you haven't checked out part one of the questions I regularly ask myself, be sure to check out that. Hopefully this will work as a standalone as well, but I definitely recommend checking out part one first. I actually had intended on recording them back to back, but last week's one was even a little bit heavier in terms of some of the topics I covered, so I left a week between recordings, or a few days even between recordings. Normally I would press record and go straight into part two of an episode, but I wanted to let that one breathe a little bit, so I hope you got a lot of value from it. So I'm going to jump in today. Again, these are questions that I regularly come back to when I'm struggling with any area of my life, my personal life, fitness, if I'm trying to hit a goal in an event or an endurance challenge that I've set myself, or business where I'm coming up against a wall and can't feel like I can see the other side. I generally come back to these questions pretty regularly. I have a set time during the month where I'll look at them and I'll just go back over, and whatever jumps out at me, I'll allow my reticular activation system, the part of my brain that tells me what to focus on, what to jump on and what question to focus on. But particularly if I'm struggling in an area, particularly in personal life, I find these questions come in really, really well, because they allow you to kind of take ownership back of the way you're feeling, and you don't start blaming people and you don't start complaining because you realize that it all comes back on you. So I regularly use these if I'm struggling in any area, and it allows me to stay accountable to myself. So I hope you got a lot of value from last week's episode, and I'm going to try and provide the same in today's episode. I'm going to jump back and forth with fitness as well. There'll be a lot of mindset stuff here, but for fitness, nutrition and training, definitely check out some of the other podcasts if this is your first time listening. And for those of you that have been longtime listeners, if you want information on my next Top 50 program, which is starting this month in September, just send me an email, brian@briankeenefitness.com, and I'll send you all the information on that. It'll be the only one I'm running, possibly running one more before the end of the year, but it's definitely the only one for the next few months, so just send me an email on that. So part two, questions I regularly ask myself. As I said in last week's episode, one of my mentors said to me once that smart people have great answers and geniuses have great questions. And the power of your questions can really dictate the way that you start to see things. And for me, and again, I'll use myself because your own best example, I can get up into my head a lot where I kind of go into my own world or my own zone and I don't really see the forest amongst the trees. And my natural go-to, my automatic system one, as Daniel Kahneman from Thinking Fast and Slow, my automatic heuristic of my thought process would be to blame somebody else or to complain about a situation or think that I was stuck. I've done a lot of work over the last several years trying to rewire that system one with different belief systems that weren't supporting me. But one of the things that allows me to stay accountable is coming back to these questions regularly. And accountability is key in whatever it is you're trying to achieve, whether that's your fitness goals, your business goals, or your just life and relationships in general. If you're not accountable to somebody or something, it's very, very easy to fall off. And I get it 100% from the fitness point of view. One of the reasons that I'm able to work with so many people and serve them in fitness and other coaches that are similar is the fact that you're keeping people accountable, you're giving them a blueprint on what they need to do, you're adapting it to them, but the accountability is huge. And you may find that there are certain areas of your life that you need to be more accountable externally to somebody else. And there's other parts of your life that you don't need to be accountable at all. You may find that you thrive in your workplace or a business and you're always getting your tasks done, but you can't stay on top of your nutrition. So then it's like a little bit of self-awareness to realize, do I need a nutritionist or a personal trainer to help me stay on track with this area of my life? For me, when I started my business first, I needed to work with business coaches because trying to stay on top of my finances and my ins and my outs, I was struggling with that. Even though I was able to generate revenue and I had a lot of clients and a lot of, particularly when I was one-to-one, I had a lot of revenue coming in, but I wasn't able to manage the outgoings. I didn't know where to spend my money in terms of advertising. I wasn't 100% sure on marketing budget and how to allocate that, and just basic asset allocation in general. So I had to have a coach, and coaches helped me with that. But I was super in the sense of my fitness journey. I would prepare for shows and photo shoots, and I could do that by myself. I would have coaches that helped, but I wouldn't need to check in with them every week because I was able to stay accountable to that. And I do regularly say how you do anything is how you do everything, but there are slight exceptions for the things that you feel that you motivate yourself for more. So if you're really, really good in an area of your life like fitness, but your business is suffering or your work is suffering or your family is suffering, then looking for external accountability can help you. And then again, you may find that you just need to be accountable to yourself. These questions regularly do it for me. There's parts of my personal life that I'm still not happy and I'm constantly striving to improve. Personality traits that heuristics and personal and psychological misjudgments that I have, my automatic system one kicking in at certain times when I'm trying to deal with a personal or romantic relationship or anything along those lines, and I have to catch it and be a lot more accountable to myself or to other people as a result, whereas I don't need it in fitness. So keep that in mind when I'm going through today's questions, that you may find that even though I'm using business as a reference point or fitness as a reference point or a personal relationship or romantic relationship as a reference point, it may show up in a different area for you. So that's why these questions are so important. I love the story of Albert Einstein when he was a professor, I think it was in Princeton University, where after about 2 years of giving the same exam question at the end of the year, the other professors came up to Einstein and said, look, Albert, they're on to you. The kids know exactly what question you're going to ask. You've been asking the same question at the end of year exam for the last 2 years. They know this is coming up again. And they said, you need to change it. And he said, I'm not changing it. And he goes, why aren't you changing it? He goes, because I ask the same questions, but the answers keep changing. And again, the man was a genius for a reason. And that's the power of questions. You come back to these regularly and you get different answers. It's why I have a set list of questions that I come back to, because the answers keep changing depending on what part of my life that I'm trying to prioritize at that moment in time or what level that I'm trying to move up to. So keep that in mind as I go through, and I'll jump straight into the follow-on questions from last week. So some of these are shorter than last week and some of these I'm going to flesh out, so I hope you enjoy. So the first one is, whose fault was this really? And the reason I've got this in my list of questions is because of a personality flaw that I have automatically, that I've tried to iron out over the last several years, is an automatic psychological misjudgment where I would go to blame other people when something wouldn't go right or a circumstance wouldn't go right. And it's not a personality trait that I'm proud of, and it's one that I had to catch, particularly in my mid-20s, when I realized that it wasn't serving me in any way. And I live by the thought process that if nothing changes, nothing changes. And blaming other people or finding fault externally was never moving anything forward. And it also didn't allow me to learn from failure. It didn't allow me to take that feedback to move one step closer next time. Because when you're blaming somebody else for any external situation and you put it on them, it takes all the ownership off you and you never actually move forward. You never actually get better because you're blaming them. One of the areas that I've spoken on the podcast in the past that I've struggled with is the romantic relationships with people. I've been a lot better with personal relationships over the last several years and honing those ones that are the most important to me. But one of the things that allowed me to get better in this area of my life was taking ownership for the fact that it all came back on me. And it's very easy to point the finger at somebody else and realize that yeah, well, it's their fault. You know, they were a crappy girlfriend, or they were a crappy partner, or they were a crappy husband or wife or whatever it is. Not realizing that that doesn't help you get any of the feedback on your part, and it doesn't help you move forward in any way. I would do the same thing with my business, where I would see more successful people that were quote unquote doing better for me, and my success metric for me at the time was money, making a lot of money. And if I saw they were making more, which was my success metric at the time, I would make an excuse and go, well, you know, I don't know how they're getting that many people, or, you know, it's not my fault that the clients aren't coming to me, not realizing that they were actually providing a better service, or that they were better at what they did. When you start to own it and realize, you know what, I'm not as good as that trainer, or I don't run my business as well as that person, that allows you to put it back on you. And when you own it, you can control it. And when you control it, you can change it. Taking full ownership of everything puts it back into your hands. It puts the ball back in your court and allows you then to take control of it and change it if you decide to. Putting fault on somebody else doesn't do that. It automatically takes it off your hands and allows you to miss an amazing opportunity to use failure as feedback, because all failure is one other way that didn't work. Every romantic relationship that you had that didn't work, every business opportunity or job you've went into that you weren't happy with that didn't work, every time you went on a nutritional plan or a diet or a training program that didn't work for you, it got you. It's getting you, or has got you, one step closer to what it is you actually do want to do if you choose to use the failure as feedback. That's the only difference. When you rewire that. I had a situation with my daughter recently. Holly, who's 3, was playing football, and she's really coordinated in terms of sports coordination. It's probably going to be one of her talents, I would think, as she's older. And we were practicing kicking and catching back and forth. And she hit 2 or 3 passes away. She's normally able, about 10 yards away, to kick the ball directly into my hands. And I would tell her a bad pass. And then she went on her stoop and she sat down and just folded her arms and said, I'm not playing anymore. I said, why aren't you playing? She goes, I'm not playing anymore. I said, is it because you had a bad pass? She was like, yeah. And I said, well, you just get up next time and you make a better pass. I was like, can you keep doing it until you get it right? And she got up and then started passing it again. And then the smile came back in her face. That's a rewiring, that when you don't do it right, you've got direct feedback on what you need to do next time. And it's hardwired in our DNA to think failure is a bad thing. Failure is not bad. Failure is fucking awesome, because it's feedback on one other way that didn't work. And every time you choose to look at it that way, it moves you one step closer to the end goal, and it makes you better. You learn nothing from success. I can say all the successful, quote unquote, subjective successes I've had, I've learned very, very little from those successes. I've learned a shitload from failure, because you learn it. Going broke 3 times has made me very, very good at money. It allows me to run my business in a very, very tight ship. I wouldn't have got that without that. I had health problems as a teenager. I used to get really, really bad headaches and digestive problems. That's allowed me to have more energy and more focus now, because I'm able to stay on top of my health, stay on top of my nutrition. It's feedback, but you have to choose to see it. Every bad date, every bad business opportunity, every failed experiment with fitness is moving you one step closer to the body you want, the partner you want, the job you want, but you have to choose to see it that way. Failure is the key. And when you learn to embrace it and learn to fucking love it, you stop putting fault on other people and you take full ownership of it, because you realize that it's up to you on what you want to do. If nothing changes, nothing changes. You have to change the way you see it in order to reframe and contextualize failure as a positive thing that moves you one step closer. By all means, cut it down as much as you can. Work with professional people, read books, listen to podcasts. You have to learn from mistakes, but nobody said they had to be your mistakes. Cut the learning curve as much as you can and learn vicariously through other people and what they did and what didn't work. But when you do fail, which you will, because if you're striving to achieve anything, and it's relative whatever your Everest is, or whatever your small goals or targets are, or your huge goals or big targets are, it's completely relative to you, but you will fail. That will happen. But the contextual frame that you put on it, and whether it's a positive or a negative thing, that's going to determine what you do going forward. And that comes from taking ownership and not blaming other people. When I was able to change the way I looked at that, and when I was able to change that complaining or giving fault to external things or external people wasn't actually moving me any closer to my end goal, it allowed me to self-reflect and realize that when I own these things, I can change them. And if I really want to hit, if I'm fucking all the talk in my own self-talk on wanting to achieve the things I want to achieve, if I'm not owning them, it's never going to fucking happen, because it's up to the external world whether you get what you want. And luck is when opportunity and preparation meet one another. You need to prepare yourself for when those opportunities come, and that comes from owning it, and that comes from not blaming other people, and that will get you one step closer to whatever it is you're trying to achieve. Okay, next one is, are you projecting right now? So this is, again, a lot of questions in this podcast, or these part two of the, and part one in this podcast, of personality flaws and characteristics that I have myself that I've had to try and iron out and continuously try and manage and stay on top of. And projection is another one. For those unfamiliar with projection, it's where you basically take an emotion or a feeling that's on you and you put it onto somebody else. And there's generally three types of ways to do this. People either suppress it, where they completely push it down and don't acknowledge it's a thing at all. And it normally leads to people being depressed about themselves, where they see something that annoys them and they just suppress it down and they say nothing, and that builds. And then there's escapism, where people will act as if it didn't happen and they'll just completely disconnect. You see this in relationships where somebody's gone out with somebody for 2 or 3 years and then the boyfriend leaves or the girlfriend leaves and the other partner that's left there is like, I didn't see it coming. That's escapism. Every time you had a conflict or a problem, you probably avoided it, because there's no way that you can't see smoke and there not be fire unless you're choosing to bury your head in the sand. And I've done this. It's how I recognize it. Just because you choose not to accept reality doesn't mean that reality doesn't exist. And when you don't like a situation, it's very, very easy to either suppress it or escape from it, where you just tune out. And every time there's a problem or a conflict, you either escape from it or you disengage from it, or you switch yourself off mentally from it. And I've done this. That's exactly how I can recognize it in people, is because if I didn't like reality, because I didn't like the feedback that was coming back from people, or I didn't like the somebody challenging parts of my character that I thought I held high opinions of myself in. Like, one of the reasons I don't separate anything right now in terms of opinion is the fact that I can't, it's all opinion. Everything you hear is an opinion, not a fact. And everything you see is a perspective, not a truth. And when you're able to disconnect yourself from either the opinions of others because you hold your opinion of yourself higher, or you disconnect yourself that I'm not attached to any idea that I have, realizing that it's only an opinion in this moment in time because of the given information that I choose to see, or the given information that I have, you realize that that's just the contextual frame that you've wrapped around the situation. And when you have all these belief systems about yourself that, you know, I'm a good person, or I'm a good dad, or I'm a good mom, or I'm a good boyfriend, or I'm a good girlfriend, all these contextual frames or these stories you've told yourself, they not may not be the reality. Just because you say they're true doesn't make them true. And that's escapism, where you're faced with a conflict and you just completely escape into, you know, X Factor or Love Island or football or your sport or whatever it is, your video games, whatever it is that allows you to completely escape. It allows you to disconnect from that. That's not generally what I did as my primary go-to. I used to project a lot. So projection is the outward version of this, where you would see something online on or on Instagram and you'd project your own insecurity onto that person. So for me, how it used to show up, and I'll use myself because you're your own best example, was when I would see a fitness guy who was in amazing shape, particularly at the height of my fitness modeling career, when I would see a guy who was bigger than me, or I'd see a guy who was leaner than me, or I would see a guy who I just preferred their shape to mine, I used to always project my insecurity onto them. And I'd be like, well, that guy's on fucking steroids. Or that guy probably has no life. Or that guy, you know, he's so insecure. He's probably training all the time, not realizing that all I was doing was projecting my own insecurity onto them. And every time I ever feel that emotion welling up within me now, if I ever feel insecure, and one of the ones I've had to catch, and this is probably the, my own realization even now, and I had this conversation with a friend recently, was when I feel insecure around somebody else, I feel I have to project my own achievements onto them in order for them to respect me. And this is something I've done, and I had to catch myself probably the third time, which shows you it's a consistent work in progress, that if I would walk into a room and there was somebody that whatever my success metric was at the time. So if it was money, earning more money, if it was social media, it was having more followers, if it was in fitness when I was competing, somebody that had achieved higher positions in competitions than me. And I would feel in the conversation, I would have to get across the things that I was good at in order to feel secure in that room. So for me, if I walked into a room and there was someone bigger or leaner than me, I would have to tell them how much money I was earning, which is so fucking ridiculous now when I look back. Because I was doing well in that side of my life, I felt insecure with the way I was looking. I had to project the thing that I was successful in order to make myself feel more secure around that person. About three times after doing this, I realized, I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, because I didn't realize, because sometimes they always say you can't smell your own breath. And that's what it was like. I wasn't able to see how I was coming across until the third time. And I was like, why am I telling him this? Why am I explaining how good I am or the things I've achieved? I used to do the same thing when I used to compete, because I had a pro card in fitness modeling, which meant I could compete for money. If I met somebody who was bigger than me, or I felt was, oh God, this person is, you know, got 20,000 more followers than me, I'd be like, well, I have a pro card. And I would tell them that, and I would put that into their face, not realizing that all I was doing was projecting my own insecurity onto them. Everybody has their version of that, where they feel insecure in your presence, or they feel insecure around somebody else's presence, and they start listing their achievements, or they will literally just take something that they see and dislike and be like, well, fuck him, you know, or fuck her, she's got a boob job, or she's got ass implants, or, you know, she's got an eating disorder. We'll cognitively use the sour grapes theory, which, for those of you unfamiliar with Aesop's fable, The Fox and the Sour Grapes, there's a fox walking down a forest and he sees these beautiful, juicy grapes in the tree that he wants to reach for and thinks, oh my God, they're going to be incredible. They're going to be so tasty. And he reaches and he jumps and he reaches and he jumps and he can't reach the grapes. And he walks away and goes, well, those grapes are probably sour anyway. It's just a story we tell ourselves to make ourselves feel better. Just because the person that you're looking at that's making you feel insecure, if you have to tell yourself a story that they're probably miserable in their relationship, or they probably have no money, or they probably have an eating disorder, or they're probably using steroids or drugs, that's a story you've told yourself. There's no evidence for that necessarily. That's not reality necessarily. It's just something you've told yourself to make yourself feel better. When you start to catch that and realize that you're projecting your own internal emotions onto somebody else or onto an external thing, it really allows you to see things differently. And the reason it's helped me so much, and it's a question I have to come back to so regularly, is because it consistently shows up in different ways, because your value ladder changes. The thing that you hold as top priority changes. If you're a new parent and you've got a 2 or 3 year old, you may be comparing your parenting style to your friends and family, where that may not have been even on your radar 4 years ago. So your values change. It's why this question is so important, because when you start projecting your own insecurities because the things that you find valuable have changed over the years, you realize that all it does is move from one area of your life to the next. For me, it went from fitness and it moved to business, and then it went from business to relationships, where I'm like, well, why the fuck did they have a happy relationship and why can't I get that? And we ask ourselves these ridiculous questions or make up these ridiculous stories in order to make ourselves feel better. And coming back to that question so regularly helps me, because whatever's the highest in my value right then, and my life, again, ebbs and flows in terms of what I prioritize. I have my top of my value ladder, helping serve as many people as I can, my daughter, my mom, my inner circle, and then anybody else that comes into that. But little things underneath that can change. And if I find that I start feeling insecure, which is the emotion, it may not be insecurity for you, maybe anger or rage or something else that pops up within you and you project it onto somebody else. Mine is insecurity. But recognizing when you're projecting out, and recognizing that everything that you choose to see and everything that is wrong with the situation is on you. And when you realize that every problem that you'll ever have is your fault, and you realize that every time you feel uncomfortable in a situation, it's the contextual frame that you've given that situation. There's nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. You put a contextual frame around it and you've attached emotion or you've attached opinion to what's going on, to the person or the external thing or the environment in general. And that's what's making you feel. You may be having a physiological state change where you now feel really insecure, anxious, or angry, but you've done that. The way you've seen the situation has done that. So when you ask yourself, are you projecting right now? It allows you to pull yourself back and realize that that person hasn't actually done anything wrong, or that external situation isn't actually good or bad. It's just what I've decided to put onto it, the contextual frame that I've given it. So ask yourself, are you projecting right now? Again, as I said, it may show up in different areas for you. And the reason I have to come back to it so regularly is because I've seen it pop up in different areas. And then the way in which I've projected outwards, again, has shown up in different areas. So it's something that's very important for me personally to catch. So I hope it benefits you too. So the next question is, are you dropping your standards? And this is one that kind of ties in with, are you working to your potential or working to your quota? And when you have certain areas of your life that you hold yourself to a higher standard, and certain areas of your life where you may not hold that standard, you have to ask yourself the question, is the only reason that I haven't decided to have it all is because I don't believe that it's possible? And one of the biggest misconceptions that I had throughout most of my 20s is that I can choose the things that I want, but in order to do that, other things in my life have to suffer. Not realizing that a lot of the amazing things, like your shape, your job, your relationships, romantic or personally, they can all run in parallel. I had a ridiculous story in my mind that of the I'll get this and then I'll get that. I'll get myself in amazing shape and then I'll focus on a job I want. I'll get the job I want and then I'll focus on the relationship I want. I'll focus on the relationship I want and then I'll focus on building up my inner circle and my friends and building those networks of people. Not realizing that they can all run in parallel. And all it was catching a negative story or a non-supportive story that wasn't helping me. But it comes back to, are you dropping your standards because you think that's the way it needs to be? You may find that your standards are so high in your fitness life that you stick to every meal, that you never miss a gym session because you hold it in a higher value ladder. You hold it high up in terms of your values and what you prioritize to do. But you settle for a relationship where you're unhappy, or you settle for a job that you don't really like, not realizing that you can have it all. You just literally have to put enough time, energy, and effort into all of the buckets and surround yourself with the right people that allow you to do that. Coming back to the questions, are you dropping your standards? For me, it feels like someone's throwing ice water over my face when I'm starting to settle because I want something so bad. And one of the conversations I had with a friend recently about, he was struggling with being single and wondering why he didn't have a girlfriend. And I was able to connect with him on that level because I understand the figurative or the attachment that can come from telling yourself a story that's non-supportive in terms of I'll have this and then I'll have that, and a story of I don't need a boyfriend or a girlfriend right now because I'm trying to do my thing, I'm trying to focus on my business, or I'm trying to focus on my fitness, or I'm trying to focus on my kids, not realizing that it can run in parallel. And all that you're doing there is dropping your standards because you think that you need to put all your effort and time and energy into this one thing. And you may settle for something else just because you're lonely, or just because you feel you have to, or there's nothing better out there. When you drop your standards, it's very, very difficult to raise them back up in that area. So what I would advise is piggybacking that question with, are you working to your potential or working to your quota? Because there's a big difference between doing the things that you can actually be and then working to your quota, which is effectively working to a semi-standard below what you think you can achieve. When you start to see that you can have all the great things and that they can run in parallel, that they're not necessarily I'll have this and then I'll have that, and that by dropping your standards just because you want something so bad isn't the way to do it. It's very, very easy to go on a broccoli and chicken diet for 6 weeks and train twice a day, or go on a bar or juice diet. It's very easy to drop your standards in your nutrition, your fitness, because you want to drop dress sizes or have a six pack so bad. It's very easy to do that, but you're not going to be able to sustain that long term. It's very easy to drop down your standards in a personal or romantic relationship because you're lonely, because you really want to have somebody, you really want a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and you'll drop your standards in that area of your life just because it's something you want so bad. And you have to realize that the good is the death of great. And when you settle, and settle will fucking make you question your decisions going back as far as the initial decision to take that path. When you settle, that's a horrible feeling and a realization to come to when you start climbing that ladder. And for those of you who read The Fitness Mindset, my best-selling book, in the mindset section of The Ladder Against the Right Wall, you're better off being at the bottom of the ladder against the right wall than halfway up the ladder against the wrong wall. And I 100% get it. And I 100% see the temptation of dropping your standards because you want something so bad, and taking a job because you think it's the thing that you want, because you want to have the money so that you can appear successful to the outside world, or you accept the job because you think it'll give you social status, or you accept the job because it's what your parents wanted, or it's what society said you should do, or what your friends and family said you should do. But you're dropping your personal standards in order to make everybody else happy. When you start realizing that, when you drop your standards and when you settle, and settle can be for you whatever way it shows up for, when you start to settle for things, I guarantee you, when you play out that entire journey and you walk down that whole path, you climb to the top of that ladder, you're going to look back and go, I'm against the wrong fucking wall. That comes from dropping your standards, and I get it. When you want something badly, it's very, very tempting to settle because you feel that having something good is better than having nothing at all. And to some extent, it might be. But good is also the death of great, and you will never have anything great if you settle for the good. So ask yourself, are you dropping your standards? And then to piggyback with that, are you working to your potential or working to your quota? Working to your potential is seeing what it is that you want and then working towards that and not setting a limit on yourself. Working to your quota is working to what everybody says you should. And one of the reasons that I did Marathon de Sable, which is a 250-kilometer race to the Sahara, and one of the reasons that I've lined myself up for some pretty intense endurance events next year, is down to working to my potential and not to my quota. Because my quota is the baseline rate of what everybody else can do. I'm like, well, I could probably run a marathon. You know, most people can run a marathon if they train. I could probably run a marathon. That's why I was like, well, I wonder if I could run 250 kilometers through the Sahara Desert. That's working to potential. And all that is making the decision to do it. I'm not saying for you to run fucking 250 kilometers through the Sahara, but I am telling you to question where your limits are. Question, are you working to your potential or to your quota? David Goggins, who is an ex-Navy SEAL, has a great theory on training, and I do this regularly, where he thinks that we only work to 40% of our max. And when I'm in workouts, I ask myself that question. If I'm doing a high intensity workout, am I truly at 10 out of 10 right now? Am I truly at 100% right now? Or am I at 40% and I fooled myself into thinking I'm at 100%? That's working to potential and working to quota. It allows you to dig down deeper. And the reason I love fitness so much is that it is such an amazing baseline point, or such an amazing anchor for all the things that you do in your life. Because when you learn to push to your potential in your training, and you learn to put those extra plates on the bar, or you learn to run that extra half kilometer, or you learn to do that extra sprint at a higher intensity or a higher level on the exercise bike, when you learn to work to your potential and not to your quota, you start to see things changing. Your body starts to physically change and transform in front of your eyes. When you realize that that's how everything in life is, when you lean into that discomfort and start working to your potential and not working to your quota of just because it's what you think you should be, and you're working to your true 100% and not your fucking 40%, everything changes. With that, combining your standards being high and not settling to to what somebody else says you should do and not settling because you think you're at your quota. When you start pushing limits, you start to see where those limits are, and you start to see a really fucking crazy thing that a lot of your limits, and probably all of your limits, are self-created. I came back from the desert, and for those of you new to the podcast, I've done a full podcast on that 250 kilometer run through the Sahara. I came back from the desert and was like, okay, fuck, what else am I looking to choose as a limitation? Because there was once upon a time when I didn't believe it was possible. One, I didn't believe it was possible to run 250 kilometers. Didn't believe it was possible to do it in the desert heat. Didn't believe it was possible to do it through the fucking Sahara. And then as soon as I realized that, I'm like, well, people do this. People have done this. Of course it's possible. If one person has done it, it's actual physical proof that it can be done. B1, C1. And it made me come back and question all the areas of limitation I had in my life. I'm like, fuck, where else am I holding myself to my quota and not to my potential? Where else am I dropping my standards? And it started to show up in other areas. And that's the power of setting yourself physical tasks and using psychological transformation through physical suffering or physical challenge. Fitness can do that. And for me, it gives me an anchor. It gives me a reference point for how I do everything else in my life. It may be different for you, but ask yourself the question, are you working to your potential or working to your quota? And ask yourself the question, are you dropping your standards right now because you're settling for something just because you want it so bad, or you're settling for something because you've set a limitation on that? Those limitations are self-created. When you start to change the story you're giving yourself and the story you're telling yourself about the limitations that you've created, everything can open up as a result. So ask yourself that question. Are you dropping your standards right now? Okay, next question. Is that fact or opinion? This one's going to be a little bit shorter, but one of the realizations that I've had, and I spoke of it earlier, that everything we hear is an opinion, not a truth, and everything we see is a perspective, not a fact. And when you start to realize that there are very few true facts out there, and that most things that you have are opinions that you hold, when you're able to separate that, you start to, one, not get very ideological on your opinion, because you realize that that's all it is, and that opinions are, should be, if they're not, they should be there to be changed. The mind is like a parachute. It's only good when it's open. And if you're not able to change your opinion on something, you have an ideology. You don't have an opinion, you have an ideology, and you have a belief. And beliefs are fucking dangerous if they're not supporting you and moving your life forward in a positive way. Opinions can be changed. Facts, on the other hand, are things that are set in stone. But there are very true, rarely true facts because of the way things change. Right now, there are certain things like the laws of thermodynamics where you jump out of a building, off a 10-story building, gravity is going to work against you and you're going to go fucking splat on the ground. That right now is a fact, unless something massively changes in our external environment and the laws of astrophysics start to change, or the laws of physics in general start to change, that is going to remain a fact. But the stories you've told yourself, the opinions you hold on training or nutrition or relationships or jobs or business, they're all opinions. They're not facts. And I got them confused for so many years because of the belief systems that I was brought up with. Like, I was always told that, one, you can't make money in fitness, that you can't make money in a gym. That was a fact for me. That was a belief system that, because of the amount of reinforcement that that idea got, it became a belief. It wasn't, and it was an opinion that got too many supporting legs and became a belief system for me. That's what happens when you're constantly reinforced by a negative idea. It becomes an ideology, or it becomes a fact in your mind. When you're able to disconnect it and start knocking those fucking legs from that table, you start to realize that that's not a fact. It's not. If it was a fact, then nobody would do it. It was an opinion. And that was my belief system. I was told growing up that you had to go and get a regular job. You had to get a 9-to-5 so that you could get a mortgage, you could pay your bills, you could have a family, get 2.3 kids, and then, you know, retire at 65, travel the world, and then you die. That was my belief system, that that's what a successful life was, or that's what you did in life to be successful. That was an opinion that was given too many supporting legs and too many supporting ideas and constantly reinforced it until it became a belief. Beliefs are fine. And if they're supporting you and they're helping you and they're serving you, then keep them. I've got belief systems that I intentionally hold because they make me a better person and they allow me to serve the world in a better way. I've got belief systems like if you can hold it in your mind, if you can see it in your mind, you can hold it in your hand. I've got belief systems that every mental or psychological thought that you have manifests itself in the physical world. These are belief systems that help serve me because they allow me to create things from the formless into the physical. And I hold that belief system because it helps me, it supports me. If it's not helping you and not serving you, you need to fucking cut it. That's why podcasts are so good. That's why books are so good, because they bridge the gap between the things you don't know and the things you don't know you don't know. And when you realize there are things out there that you don't even realize you don't know yet, the whole world can open up as a result. And all those belief systems that you once held in your life start to get shattered. And it comes back to what I mentioned about Marathon de Sable and the limitations. I had all these self-limitations created on myself, either in my personal life or my business life or my fitness life. All these limitations that I thought either my body or my mind couldn't achieve because they were limits. They all got smashed. A part of me fucking died in the desert because I came back and went, everything's fucking possible. You can do anything when you literally put one foot in front of the other and keep moving forward towards whatever it is you're trying to achieve. That belief system supports me right now. But when you have those negative beliefs and you have those negative opinions and realize that just because you grew up a certain way or you were told a certain story and that story got reinforced over and over and over again, the reason these questions are so important is because they allow you to own the things that have happened to you. If you've had a bad relationship after bad relationship after bad relationship, it's very easy to put the fault on somebody else. It's very easy to say, oh, I keep attracting the wrong type of guy or the wrong type of girl. No, you don't. You keep going to the wrong type of guy or the wrong type of girl. You're making a conscious choice or a subconscious automatic choice to go down a road or a path that you know is wrong, either internally, subconsciously, or consciously. Yet we still do it because we have other driving factors. Insecurity, sexual drive, whatever it is that's pulling you towards that person. You need to do higher level thinking and realize that, oh, this guy or girl is exactly like the last three relationships and they went terribly wrong. Maybe I shouldn't enter into this. When you don't know what you want, you'll take whatever you get. And knowing that every story you've told yourself, when you start to own it and stop blaming the outside world and stop blaming your daddy or blaming your mom or blaming the external fucking world or your boss and everybody that's in it, and you own it, you realize that you have full control of everything. And that everything is a contextual frame that you've given it. And that everything is an opinion. And that everything that you feel is going wrong, when you can put it back on yourself and realize that all it is an opinion about how I feel about this given situation, then it's not a fact of the physical world. Because if it was a fact of the physical world, it would be able to prove that there's no other way around it. If one person has done the thing you want to do, it's living proof it can be done. You telling yourself that you can't do it is a self story, is a story you've created in your own mind and is a limiting belief system that you have. It is not a fact, it is an opinion. If you tell yourself you can't drop three dress sizes, if you tell yourself you can't get abs, if you tell yourself you can't get a good boyfriend or a good girlfriend, if you tell yourself you can't get another job that you really want to do, that you love to get up and tap dance to work every morning or start your own business, that is an opinion. That is not a fact because other people have done it. If other people have done it, it's living proof that it can be done. Separate your facts from your opinions and everything will start to open up as a result. And the last one, which is probably my favorite question because it's the one that's supported me and moved my life forward in more ways than any of the other previous questions. But the reason I've saved it for last is one, because it's my favorite and the one that I do nearly automatically now every time I'm making a decision, either in a business opportunity, a personal or romantic relationship, or dealing with my inner circle or life in general. But also the questions prior to this is what sets this one up, because when you start owning everything and not blaming and putting faults with external things or external people, and realizing that most of your insecurities or emotions are projections, and you stop dropping your standards and working to your potential and separating your facts from your opinions, asking yourself the question, what's the best case scenario? What's the worst case scenario? And can I handle the worst case scenario? Or what's the upside? What's the downside? And can I handle the downside? That single question can make you attack fears and things that would have scared you once in your life. And for those of you listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I live by the acronym for FEAR, false evidence appearing real. And when you start attacking the fears and start attacking things that you're afraid of, behind every fear is a person that you want to be. The way to attack that is weighing up a cost-benefit analysis, which is an economics term on what's the cost and what's the benefit of if you actually put this amount of work into this area, or you put this amount of economy or money into this area, what's the benefit and how much will it cost you? If it works out as a pro or a positive figure, then you do it. The best case scenario and worst case scenario and handling the worst case scenario can show up in so many ways. I did a podcast a couple of months ago about trying to pull birds out of your league. And I used that title because that was the question that came in. And on the outset of that podcast, it looks like how to pull girls way out of your league. And it can sound like it's a joke answer. And I had a little bit of fun with that one. But the answer for that question was doing a cost-benefit analysis. It was weighing up the best-case scenario and weighing up the worst-case scenario. And then asking yourself, can you handle the worst-case scenario that may present itself? When you see a boy or a girl or a man or a woman, somebody that you're attracted to, either physically or emotionally or in whatever sense that you're attracted to them, again, you may have different values for what you find attractive in someone. You may be very sapiosexual, where you find intelligence very sexy. You may work off sexual drive, where you need to be physically attractive and nearly have that raw, emotional, primitive drive towards somebody. Whatever it is that you're into, whatever your bar is set and whatever it is that you tend to attract or you tend to go for, and you see somebody like that, that you're like, oh, there's potential here for either something short term or long term. Again, depending on where you're at in your life, you may have very, very different values right now. You may want something short term that's a lot of fun, that allows you to disconnect from the world, and a summer fling or an autumn fling in this case, where you're spending 4 to 6 weeks with somebody and you're like, this is amazing, and then it just fizzles out like a firework. Or you may be in a time in your life when you're ready to settle down with a potential life partner. If you see that person out and about and you see a person that could potentially fit into that part of your life, so many times we let fear stop us talking to that person. And I use romantic relationships in this context because I think a lot of us can resonate with it. Is we'll see somebody that we're attracted to, or somebody at work, or somebody we see every day in the gym that we really want to talk to, or proceed to see if there's anything or any chemistry with that person, guy or girl. And yet we let the fear stop us. We let the false evidence appear real, and we let the fear stop us because, oh my God, what will they say? Or, oh my God, what if they, you know, laugh at me? You have to ask yourself the question, what's the best case scenario and what's the worst case scenario? The best case scenario is you end up getting exactly what you want. You connect with this person and you end up having a potential life partner, somebody you spend the rest of your life with, and you've moved your life from a figurative 8 or a 9 to a 10 out of 10 because you now have somebody that is your yin to your yang. You now have somebody that's your person that's your go-to, that you're going to build a life with. That's potentially your best case scenario. You know, if it's someone that you randomly want to have an autumn fling with, you may end up having somebody that you've connected with on an unbelievable level, and you remember in 10 years time when you look back and go, my God, that was a fucking awesome September, or that was an awesome October with that person because we connected and all we did was hook up and have sex for 6 weeks. That may be what you want. That may be your best case scenario. What's the worst case scenario? That person says no. The worst case scenario is you go up to a person in a bar or a club or a gym and you approach them and ask them for coffee, you ask them for dinner, you ask them for lunch. Most will say probably yes or no. And the worst case scenario is they'll laugh in your face and maybe throw a drink in your face. That's the worst case scenario. Can you handle that worst case scenario? And then weigh it up against the pro. Weigh it up against the best case scenario. All the gold in life comes when you start weighing up that best case scenario with handling the worst case scenario, because very, very, very rarely does the worst case scenario ever happen, and very, very rarely is the worst case scenario worse than the actual potential upside on the best case scenario. Same with leaving your job. I had the exact same thing when I left teaching to start my own fitness business. I weighed myself up on the best case scenario, which is effectively what I'm living right now, that I live on my own terms. I work from a laptop, have an amazing team, get to work with amazing people, and I get to provide and serve the world and try and make it a better place with the knowledge and information that I have in a medium that I'm able to transmit well across. Best case scenario. My worst case scenario when I left my job was that I went back teaching. I remember having this conversation with my mum when I was afraid to make that jump, and she was like, well, what's the worst case scenario? I'm like, well, the worst case scenario is that I go back teaching. She goes, so you're in the same position you're in now? I was like, yeah. That was literally the worst case scenario, yet I was letting fear dictate my decisions. A lot of the time we do that, and when we stop realizing or stop limiting ourselves by the potential worst case scenario that's never really that bad in most cases. If the worst case scenario is you die, then maybe weigh it up. You know, if you want to do something extreme, something that may potentially end your life because of high probability, you've got to weigh up that worst case scenario. If the answer is, yeah, there's a 90% chance that I could die doing this, but the best case scenario is I get amazing high and I feel great for a few days, yeah, maybe don't go down that route. That worst case scenario doesn't work out. But in 99.9% of cases, it's only fear appearing real. It's false evidence appearing real. It's fear that you've created and a story you've created around past experiences that you've had. If you've been laughed at by a girl in the past or by a guy in the past, you may have that underlying insecurity on what they might say if you approach somebody that you're attracted to right now. That's just an experience that you've had. That is not reality. That's not a fact. That's not an opinion. That person may feel the exact same way to you and they're afraid to chat to you and approach you. Ask yourself, what's the best case scenario? What's the worst case scenario? And can I handle the worst case scenario? That one question above everything else can start to open doors that you didn't even know were there. I do it with everything in my life. Any date that I've ever been on, any business opportunity that I have, any situation that involves my family or my inner circle or my daughter or my mum, I ask myself, what's the best case scenario? What's the best thing that could happen from this situation? What's the worst case scenario? And if the worst case scenario presents itself, can I handle it? Or can I deal with it if it came? That's all you do. That's all life really is weighing up the pros and the cons and then making sure that you've got more pros than you have cons. And it can be that simple. And the power of these questions, and the reason I ask myself these questions so regularly, is those answers consistently change. That question on best case scenario and worst case scenario, that can be applied to every angle in your life. That can be applied to your relationships. That can be applied to your fitness. That can be applied to your business or your job or your work. That can be applied to absolutely everything. It's the reason that I come back to it so often. All the other questions. Whose fault was this really? Are you projecting right now? Are you dropping your standards? Are you working to your potential or working to your quota? Is that fact or opinion? And what's the best case scenario? What's the worst case scenario? And can I handle the worst case scenario? When you start asking yourself these questions, they will change consistently over time. And I implore you, if this episode or part one landed with you, whatever question jumped out in your mind that you went, fuck, I need to ask myself that regularly, put it in your phone. Put it in the notes on your phone, or put it on a whiteboard, or put it on a piece of paper in your room that you see every day. Because when you start asking these questions and you start to bring them into conscious awareness and you start to bring them to the forefront of your mind where they fucking need to be, you start to see things in a different light and you stop letting your mind be programmed by external things and you start to control the questions that you're asking yourself. You start to control the way that you're seeing things. And when you start to control that, everything in your life can change as a result. And the reason that I say it is because I fucking lived it. I went from living that normal life of living to everybody else's terms and letting other people's opinions dictate my reality and letting other people's opinions dictate how I felt. Letting other people's opinions and letting society or family or people around my initial environment dictate what direction I took my life. I wasn't owning that. I was just literally living, and as if it was like a balloon being guided in the air by clouds or by the wind. I was just going in the direction the wind went. I was going in the direction that I was told I should go, not realizing that when you hold on to the fucking balloon, you can take it wherever you want to go. That's the difference. That's the different questions can have. That's why smart people have great answers and geniuses have great questions. And I'm not calling myself a genius. This is what my mentor told me. Ask yourself better questions, because your questions are going to dictate who you become. When you decide what you put into your mind and you start asking yourself the right questions and you start to see all these doors and windows opening up that weren't there before, and you start to see your life change, you'll never go back. It's the effective psychological hit of a heroin dose. It's realizing that that control, and realizing that owning everything, and realizing that the questions you ask yourself and the things you put into your own mind and the podcasts you consume and the books that you read and the people you follow, when you start consuming the right information and those thoughts become your thoughts, everything changes. And that's really fucking addictive, because you start moving and moving everything towards a 10 out of 10 in your life, your health, your wealth, your love, your fulfillment, the thing that you love doing. You start moving everything towards a 10 out of 10. You start getting your ladder against all the right walls, and you start climbing that, and you start climbing it fucking quickly, because you really see what's on the other side, and it's exactly what you want, because you haven't dropped your standards. You're not working to your quota. You're not projecting your own insecurities onto somebody else. You're not blaming other people. You're not separating all the opinions on the way you were told the world should be and confusing them for facts, and you're weighing up the best case scenarios, you're weighing up the worst case scenarios, and then you're attacking the fears, and you're working towards everything that you're trying to achieve, and you're not letting fear dictate your decisions, you're not letting people dictate your decisions, you're not letting the external world dictate what you do. You're owning it, you're controlling it, and you're changing it. So that's the five questions. If you haven't listened to part one, they literally sync up very, very well. This is a little bit of a different episode today, just because I mentioned this on a Q&A recently about the notes in my phone from August, one of the August episodes, and I wanted to expand on it just so you kind of get an inside view in things that I try and use to help me and serve me. And I'm very aware that your mess becomes your message, and the same, the positive things that help me in my life will hopefully positively affect you as well. And that's why I wanted to do this episode. It was going to be originally one episode, but I ended up fleshing it out and had to break it into two parts. So I hope you got a lot of value from it. Very, very different to normal. Not a lot of fitness or nutrition, even though a lot of the mindset side covered. I still hope you enjoyed it. So let me know. Hit me up on DM. Be sure to tag me in your Instagram stories. One of my favorite things to see is when people are tagging the podcast. So thank you so much. And I hope you enjoyed it. And I catch you all for next week's episode. Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know, my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsors of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting on medical clearance. So stay tuned for that. And remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next week.